Back to the Lead, a podcast about content marketing by Copyblogger Media. I'm your host, Jared Morris. Last week, Damian and I began a four-part series on content curation. We explained to you why you should be curating content and provided an overview for how to do it effectively. In this episode, number two in the series, we delve into the how much more deeply, specifically for link curation. We go into a little bit of the why, specific to links, then explain in detail the who, what, when, and where of link curation. Basically, we answer a lot of the questions that you all have been asking us. And yes, we really do appreciate your feedback during this series. In fact, many of you who commented and asked questions in the Google Plus discussion for the first episode will hear your names and your questions asked at the end of this episode. So keep the questions and comments coming. When you plan on an episode being 15 to 20 minutes and it cracks 40 and you don't feel compelled to cut anything out, you know it's a rich topic with many areas for actionable advice. It certainly proved to be. Also, get in your head right now an image of me and of Damian. Now, if I told you that one of us roars like a lion at the end of this episode, who do you think it is? Bet you were wrong. Listen, learn, and find out. Okay, to begin, Damian, let's do a quick bit of review and first answer the why question. Right, because curating links for your audience in any meaningful way, whether it be a roundup post or scheduled tweets or to post on Google+, requires an investment of time and attention, which we know are two increasingly scarce resources in this day and age. And, you know, frankly, to give you all a peek behind the curtain, we discuss this on our editorial calls occasionally. Heck, we discussed it on the last one. Are we wasting our time curating links for Google+ and Twitter? And I say no, we're not, and for many of the reasons that we stated back in episode one. We're already consuming the content anyway, so it doesn't take that much more time to share it. It's a great way to round out the education we provide at Copyblogger with complimentary or even alternate viewpoints. And plus, it's just a good way to be a good online citizen, to spread the good work of others as we'd hope they would do for content of ours that they think their audience might appreciate. So my question to you, Damian, is, do you agree? And if so, did I leave any good reasons out?
Yes. So, yeah, I think I do agree for the most part. And you covered it pretty well, Jared. We all are already reading. And then, you know, we're trying to cultivate our audiences. And we're, in addition, trying to grow our audiences. And so we do that through sharing that useful content, stuff that, you know, will keep people around, will make, you know, subscribing to your Twitter feed, your Google Plus feed, your blog, whatever that actually, you know, is meaningful to people. So, but I also think that, you know, it's a great way to network with the people who created the content. So you're sharing content, you come, you know, and it's a great way to introduce your audience to a new topic or writer. So you come across somebody whose work you admire. You share that content, you get on that person's radar, and they get on your audience's radar too. So it's a great way, you know, to sort of network with those people and, you know, within your own audience, and that, you know, creates opportunities and it creates conversations too. And I also think too, you know, sharing links is, we talk, you know, is this a valuable thing to do? As you know, we'll talk about later in the show, is this idea of sharing links through a an email newsletter. There are a number of resources that I appreciate, and when, you know, we hear a Copyblogger talk about, you know, creating that that list, you know, when we say that the money is in that list. So, you know, curating and sharing links through a kind of roundup email post is a successful way, is a good way to build an email, is one good way to build an email list.
Okay, but I noticed a little bit of hesitation in your voice before you said that you agree. Are there any specific reasons why you kind of think the other way, that maybe it's not a good use of time?
Well, I think that, you know, this is of course not the only way to do any of those things that, you know, we sort of mentioned. You know, just because you are reading does not mean you have to share. You know, I think there's a good example of Cal Newport, right? So he runs his blog called
Study Hacks.
Right, Study Hacks. Yeah. You know, and it'd be safe to say that it's world famous, right? Mm-hmm. And but I don't think the guy's on Facebook. I don't think he uses, you know, he doesn't curate any content. And so it's this idea that, you know, and I think about Seth Godin too. Of course, Seth Godin's a sort of anomaly in that sense. He's on another plane to most of us, but he's not out there, you know, curating content. So it's, you know, this is one way. This is not the only way. But, you know, for me, I have to balance, you know, and I tend to balance on the other side of things. It's like, you know, if I can't get around to curating today, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. This is not, you know, this is 10% of your work day, if that.
Right. Okay. And I agree with you on that. So, you know, with the why out of the way, let's move on and kind of view this through the other four W's, right? The who, the what, the when, and the where. So who should be sharing links? You know, it's very important to remember that you have to maintain editorial control of the links that you share because they are a reflection of you and your brand. And they're a tacit endorsement, even if you don't necessarily agree with the viewpoint being expressed. At a minimum, you're saying this is worth spending your time reading. And so you can't let your audience down because that's going to erode that know, like, and trust that you're trying to build. So which brings up this question, which is, should you be the one sharing links, or is this a task that you can delegate? So Damien, at Copyblogger, obviously this is a task that has been delegated to us. For our own sites, you know, the stuff that we do on the side, it's a task we handle exclusively. So are there any rule of thumbs for making that decision, or is it simply a, you know, just kind of a case by case, you have to make the best decision for your own situation sort of thing?
Well, I think it comes down to trust. You know, we weren't given, you know, sort of reign of the social accounts until, you know, we'd been with the company for a while and maintained, establishing some sort of form of trust. I mean, I do believe that they probably trusted us when they hired us to handed those over. But, you know, it comes down to, you know, can the person think, and that's the other thing too, is like when you delegate something to this, yeah, you can delegate it, but make sure the person is drinking the Kool-Aid in the sense, you know, understands what you're trying to accomplish, thinks like you do, sees like you do. This is not to say that, you know, doesn't have his maybe opinions that he doesn't share with you. There might be some things, but, you know, the core things that make, say, Copyblogger, those convictions have to be held. And the same thing for you if you're going to hire somebody to delegate to do this, because there's a lot of companies that do, you know, they actually hire social media managers or community managers who, that's their job, is to manage all these communities and social accounts and share content and everything like that. And so that person needs to be a person who is towing the party line in a sense, you know, and you can trust them. And so I think that's the rule of thumb, is can you trust them, and do they tow the party line?
Mm-hmm. Right. Like if I came across an article that said, is Dave Grohl an overrated musician? I wouldn't tweet that from the Copyblogger account, right?
I don't know. I think you could.
You're right.
I think you could. But yeah.
I can't care for my job.
Yeah. Brian Clark, by the way, loves David Cole. So.
Yes.
But no, yeah, you're right. So you wouldn't do that. You know, but the other thing too, yeah, I wouldn't, I wouldn't share something on Google Plus that said content marketing is a waste of time and always has been, you know.
Right.
That would be, you know, shooting myself in the foot. Now, granted, I could post something like that and say, here's why I disagree, or like, he brings up a good point, what do you think? Maybe for discussion.
Yep.
But, you know, and I think that's where, you know, this is where you have to be careful in that sense, is how you share it. There's a perception that's being made when you share content, you know, because I have shared things and people, and like, not with the intention of saying I'm endorsing this, but you know, I should have been more careful about how I presented it and saying, here's a bad idea, you know.
Yeah.
And then got called out for it. Like, why would you endorse something like that? I'm like, oh, you're right. You're correct. So this is the thing of, you know, trusting someone to be able to share, you know, opposing viewpoint within the context of how it fits into, you know, your company, your organization, you know, your convictions, and what are those convictions. So you can share that content, but, you know, you have to be careful how you do that.
That's an interesting point. So would you say that it's kind of a social media norm that, like, let's say on Twitter, right? If you just tweet a link with the headline and you don't say anything else, do you think it's assumed that you're endorsing the ideas in that link to where you really, you have to kind of specify if you're disagreeing. Like say, you know, I disagree with this and then post the link, or, you know, here's an alternate viewpoint, then the link, so that people know, hey, he does, he's not actually agreeing with this. He just wants me to read it. Do you think that's kind of how it's evolved?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think you have to say, if you're going to share something, because that's what you're saying. If you share the headline at the link, you're saying, read this, and I endorse this in some capacity. If you disagree with it, it has to be stated, I disagree with this, you know, and if you can, within however many characters you have, state why. So yeah, that's, a very you have to be careful with that sort of thing too. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so this brings us to now what should be shared. Very important question that, that a lot of people have. You know, you see all this content. How do you know what's worth sharing and what's not? And so I spent some time thinking about this, and really I just wanted to come up with an acronym. And so so I did, but it's basically a four-step process for figuring out if something's worthy of sharing, right? And it's ROAR, which is somewhat appropriate because, you know, this is all about amplification of ideas and links. And so ROAR, right? R for read it. I've read it. Or someone I have a tremendous amount of trust in has shared it. You got to be careful with this because if you don't read something, you don't know exactly what you're sharing. You know, like, and I posted this in the Google Plus conversation, Damien, that, you know, I mean, I've seen stuff you share. I trust you. Typically, if you share something on the Google Plus copy blogger account, I feel comfortable, you know, tweeting it from the copy blogger account, even if I don't have the time to fully read it. Just know that when you do that, you do leave yourself open, you know, if you haven't read it fully. So that's the R. The O is it's original in some way, right? So there's no need to contribute to the echo chamber over and over again. Let's amplify original ideas. Right. A is that it's applicable. Another way to say this would be that it's useful, and it's either personally useful to me, or maybe it explains a topic I already understand, but in a new way that my audience may find useful. Because remember, it's about the audience. The sharing is not so much about you. It's about what the people you're sharing it to are going to get out of it. So you can understand it already, but if it's going to help them understand it in a new way, it's worth sharing. Mm-hmm. And remember that entertaining can be useful and applicable too. You don't have to only curate links that are specifically educational or even on topic. You can stray from it a little bit, whether it's to personalize yourself a little bit or for whatever reason, just to kind of break things up a little bit. So that's the A. And then the final R is that it's from a reputable source. That's important. You know, I may read a great post, but if it's on some GeoCities-looking site with someone I don't know, you know, I'm probably not going to post that right off the bat. I'm going to want it to be from someone reputable that I trust, that I know. So if it fits those four criteria, I've read it, it's original, it's applicable, it's from a reputable source, I'm probably sharing it and then also saving it in Evernote to perhaps refer to and share again later. That's my process. Damien, do you have any kind of specific process or criteria like that that you go through when figuring out what you're going to share?
I would probably basically say that is the process. I would be so careful with the second clause, but I think the way you stated it when you said, you know, if I share something on the, you know, the copy blogger, G plus, you know, it's probably pretty safe to then share it on the Twitter, copy blogger account, in that case. But yeah, that's the only, you know, caveat there in that whole statement. But otherwise, I love the acumen and acronym, and my new nickname for you now is the Lion King.
I like that.
Yes.
I'll take that. It's my favorite Disney movie.
So you will have to, at the end of this show, you'll have to roar for us.
Okay. I think I can do that. Or at least find a funny audio effect of a roar right. Put in here at some point. Okay, so we're going to get to the where in a minute, because I know everybody has questions about the where. Where do you get links? Where do you share them? Real quick before we get to that, I want to talk about the when, because I think this is often overlooked. I even overlooked it, but I'm starting to find out that it's really important and relevant. So, you know, the when do you share is going to be dependent on your audience and when they engage with your particular kind of content on that particular medium, right? The when is going to be different for Facebook, for Twitter, for different places. So there's obviously going to be some trial and error involved. And so you've got to make sure that you're paying attention, learning from your own actions. But there are also tools you can use to gather important information. Follower Wonk, for example. That is a place that will allow you to see when the people you follow on Twitter are most active so that you can tweet during times when they are most active. If you use Buffer, for example, you can see analytics for when you post a link, how much action it has received. And you can kind of go back day by day and look at this to look for trends. So, for example, I was recently really surprised to learn that tweeting out each day's copy blogger post in the evening, and I usually schedule it around 9:35 p.m. Eastern time, typically drives more clicks than when we tweet it in the morning. And we used to only tweet it out in the morning and didn't do it at later times in the day. So, and I would not have guessed, certainly, that later at night would drive more clicks than in the morning. We can hypothesize about the reasons why, but that's probably for another episode. But just know that's a trend that I've seen. You know, other times posting seem more intuitive, but that's worked. You know, and then, you know, there are times that are intuitive that do work. Like, for example, you know, links tend to get more clicks during lunchtime, right? When people maybe have a little bit of downtime at work and they're browsing. But the commute hours are not so conducive. So pay attention to that. You know, if you want something to be seen, understand when your audience is active, and then just understand normal human nature and the normal patterns of a work day, of a work week, so that you can strategize for maximum exposure. Damien, have you found any correlations between times you post on Google Plus, say, and then the activity level that it gets, either pluses or comments?
No, I haven't really dug into that. But you know, I'm always kind of sort of surprised. I think that because we a lot of times, you know, we've gotten the habit over, since we shut down comments, that to you know sort of do the tomorrow's announcement post, the tomorrow's you know tomorrow's teaser post, and I try to post that around you know 7:30 to between 7:30 and 9:30 in the evening, and I'm always surprised by the number of activities when I come back to it in the morning. About the amount of activity that it gets, but it goes back to what you were saying, that idea that people are paying attention to, you know, they may be at work, you know, during daylight hours, not able to check, you know, their Google Plus. The other thing too, is I think that, you know, someone asked me like what, you know, how to create, you know, content that goes viral on Google Plus. I mean, it's just the way to do that is to create something that's for about Google Plus and you're making fun of, Facebook, and that's a sure winner. But, you know, I've seen things that we've shared and like, you know, that just sort of erupt, like I curate a list and it'll erupt, and it's kind of anomaly. And, you know, I've always just been sort of tracking what goes nuts and what does not. And I'm always kind of surprised that, you know, it's like one of those things that it's really difficult to tell, right? For example, I shared, you know, like sharing quotes on Twitter, for example, usually does pretty good as far as, you know, getting people to retweet, right? But, you know, the by far the most popular retweet, the tweet I've ever done was a quote by, you know, Will Rogers that said, "Never miss an opportunity to shut up." And I guess it's just human nature. And that thing just like went berserk, and there's been nothing that's even come close to like how successful that was. So it's one of those things that I think, you know, when you should share, you should be mindful of those times and, you know, use the tools like you suggested, but just constantly experiment and just kind of, you know, even if you're not like an analytical, you know, hard nose, you can just sort of keep notes and pay attention to what's working and what's, you know, this might be a good idea to use an Excel sheet or something like that for, you know, to accomplish that. But yeah, just, you know, keep on doing it and pay attention to what works and, you know, test stuff, you know, run experiments, you know, with the mind, hey, I'm gonna share this and see how it works at this particular time.
You know, and something else that's helped me too is I went through, you know, when you want to be as process oriented as you can with this so that you take away a lot of the thinking from the process, so you can focus more on the thinking when you're, you know, reading and kind of figuring out how you want to present the link. But, you know, I create a schedule, you know, so like I know at 7:30 it's yesterday, I'm going to tweet yesterday's post. At 8:30 it's going to be today's post. You know, at 1:30 and 2:30 it's going to be posts from external sites. At 3:30 it's going to be a podcast because I know people are going on their commute. So I really tried to sit down and lay that out beforehand so that it allows me to do a lot less thinking while I'm doing all that scheduling. So it's like, okay, I know I need this post. Let me find this here, you know, schedule it. Find this here, schedule it. So if you can do that planning ahead of time and get into a rhythm, not only will your audience know kind of what to expect, which is going to help you build that continuity, but it also just helps you do it and stay consistent with it on a daily basis. So, and that brings us now to the big question. Again, which a lot of people have asked us about, and Damien, I'm going to let you run with this one, and I'll jump in here in a few places. But where do you get links, and then where do you share them?
Yeah, so you know, where you share them, it basically just it's wherever you're hanging out, wherever your audience is hanging out. You know, if you have a demographic, you know, market that's on Reddit, then share content on Reddit. You know, if it's Google Plus, then do it on Google Plus. Do it on Facebook. You know, the thing to keep in mind too is that, you know, if some people will say, you know, I don't go on Google Plus because I don't know anybody there. Instead of saying that, you can look at it as an opportunity to network and meet new people. And it's the same thing can be said for whether it's Facebook or Reddit. But be mindful. I mean, because we know on Facebook, it's, you know, what's typically what middle-aged middle-class complainers, you know, so, you know, that demographic Twitter, it's, you know, I think it's a little bit younger. Reddit, we know that it's, you know, that's a millennials playground. In Google Plus, there's, you know, quite a different bit of people there too. So if you have a product, service, whatever that is, you know, your target, you know, ideal customer, reader, whatever is within that, you know, sort of social media, then jump on and share the content there. And of course, you know, share it on your blog too.
Hey, and let me ask you something here. Is it safe to say that, you know, if you decide to try a Twitter strategy, you're not making a lifetime commitment? Like, you can go out there and try it for a month, see if it works. And if it doesn't work, it's okay to say, okay, that didn't really work. I can stop this and do another one. I feel like sometimes people think if they start it, they've got to, you know, really do it forever and have the perfect strategy laid out, where sometimes you just have to experiment a little bit and see if your content or the way you present it is going to, you know, will strike that nerve or kind of reach that audience on a particular social media site. And if it doesn't, fine, walk away, go on to another one. Is that an okay strategy to have?
Yeah, that's absolutely fine. It fits my personality well, because I'm, you know, I'm kind of by the seat of your pants sort of guy. And so, like, you know, that's what I did with Medium when I toyed with Medium for about, you know, 11 days. And I did that with Tumblr for about, I don't know, you know, 30 days. I did that with Google Plus, and Google Plus seems, you know, to get more traction than anything I'd done. And so, yeah, it's a great thing. Just jump out there, give it a shot, you know, give it a try. And, without a doubt, you know, you can only, you know, you don't know until you try. So that's the where you share that. So where is the, you know, like, where do you find these links? And I think we talked about this, we sort of mentioned this, in the first podcasts in the series, this idea of curating the curators. And for me, and we talked about, you know, time being, you know, the one resource that is irreplaceable, and we don't want to squander that. So for me, it's been this idea of, like, you know, I don't have time to sit and review every, you know, it's sort of like, it reminds me of like the Robert Scoble strategy. I don't know if he still does this, but way back when, you know, he used to like read 1,000 blogs within an hour. Of course, he didn't read all those. He just he flew through the headlines. If something caught him out, he'd actually go and read that. There's no way I could do that. I have no desire to do that. I don't have the time to do that. So anyway, it's those people. It's finding those resources that do that for you. For example, like some of my favorite email newsletters, and I'll point this out, is like, I like everything to come into my inbox. I spend very little time on social sites looking for content per se. I'll have an exception to that in a minute, but I want everything to come to my inbox, because that's just, I want things to be in one place at one time. And so if I'm, you know, looking at content and I'm replying to an email, all those activities are in one place. That's just the way I like my mind to work. So if I can get a blog to send me, you know, instead of going to the RSS like on Feedly, I'll have them send me, the subscription via email. So everything ends up in my inbox. I can check it. But there are some very specific email newsletters that I read. One is the Quartz, which is created by Atlantic, and they have a daily brief. Just, you know, it's basically about international and national news. And Atlantic's The Wire does that too. They show you the top five articles across the web, and they're usually political, cultural. Then there's Dave Pell's Next Draft, and that comes out at the end of the day. He's kind of same thing. He sat down and looked at all these sites and found the 10 best articles for that day. The Daily Dig sends out, and those are usually about videos, but they occasionally will have, you know, articles of note. I like Farnham Street's Shane Parrish. He does a weekly sort of update of his own blog post, but also of articles that are of note for that week. The Moz does a top 10 monthly that is specific to our industry. So that's really always very helpful. And they've chosen 10 very good articles. And of course, one of those articles is always one of their blog posts. And then there's Growth Hackers Weekly Digest. That's, a site that's devoted to sort of the startup culture. But there's some overlap in all of these naturally. So you don't really have to pay particularly. You can do some skimming. And by the way, this should not be a long list. You cannot follow every news item. And for the most part, your life is probably not about curation. Having said that, if you don't find anything to curate, say I go through that list and because what my process will be is like, I'll go through that list, I'll find something that I find interesting, I'll open it up, and then I'll save it to readability to read later. But after having read it or coming across it, if I don't have anything to curate, like I found nothing like noteworthy, I won't share it,
Okay. So let me jump in here real quick, Damien, because I think what you just said illustrates an important point, which is that there is no one-size-fits-all process for doing this. Because, for example, for me, I hate using my inbox for curation or for following content. Like it just doesn't work for me because I like to process my emails in batch. I like to be really efficient when I'm in there, so I don't typically stop to take time to look through links. Now I'll look through a newsletter and read it, but not necessarily links. Which reminds me, I got to figure out a better way to, because like Dave Pell's Next Draft, I've had that and I keep deleting it without looking at it, and there's so much good stuff in there. So mm-hmm. I got to figure out a better way to incorporate that. But like for me, I use Feedly. I like to do it with feeds. And I can, go through my feeds. I've got them categorized, and I've even got a must read feed, which no matter what every day, I at least look at that one. So if I'm crunched for time, I can at least look there. It's, my favorite authors, the most reputable ones, so I can at least go there. And I've found that process really works for me, really, helps, and I feel like I'm able to find good content to curate on a daily basis. But again, the point is, that works for me. It may not work for you. What works for Damien may not work for you. But through trial and error and just understanding your own work process, how your own mind works, what you need to do to be able to curate without inviting too much distraction into your day, figure that out for yourself and then do it. And obviously you can use different ideas and see if they work for you, but don't think there's just some perfect one-size-fits-all answer to that question. Okay, sorry to interrupt you, Damien. Keep on.
No worries. Yeah, that's a great point. No, I think that's well said. And so let me ask you a question then. How do you use Twitter to curate links? And if you do, how do you do that?
I used to, and I really don't anymore. Don't. I find myself actually consuming content a lot less on Twitter. I like to get on there to interact, and mm-hmm. I especially like it both on my personal account and on the Copyblogger account to be able to respond to readers if they have a comment, either about one of these podcasts or an article, or if there's someone I want to reach out to or someone that I want to give kudos for a great article, that kind of thing. I will go do that, but I typically. I find myself actually reading my feed a lot less, and I'm going there for specific reasons,
right.
Whether it's to post or something like that. But yeah, no, I really have stopped using it as a curation tool, just naturally. I never made that decision, but now that you asked me that question, I'm thinking about it, and yeah, no, not really.
So I don't go there to look at the feed. What I've done is create lists. For example, like I created a list of influencers on a specific topic. I did that with all of our speakers at Authority Intensive. So leading up to the conference, I had all those speakers in a list. And I use TweetDeck too. So it allows me to quickly scan what they're sharing. Are they sharing an original content? Are they sharing any content that they're curating themselves, and then I can go and flip and share that too. So that's the only way I will use Twitter as a curation tool. But I found that kind of helpful. Sometimes I don't find anybody sharing anything that I think is valuable. However, I will say this: like Brain Pickings, for example, that is the one Twitter user who I think always is sharing just some pretty remarkable stuff. I believe she has people doing that for her, but she does really great. So you talk about feeds too. Yeah, there are there are like three feeds that I have that I especially love to pay attention to. And again, they're curators who are creating the curators. And that's called Arts and Letters. And that's, again, it's cultural, it's philosophical, it's sometimes political. Gan Gray is a great site where it's just a blog post where this guy, he shares long form, great long form articles around the web. And then Long Form is another site that sort of does the same thing. And I think you mentioned this earlier, that if you can't find anything to share, go and, back to your archives and find something from back from there, which is something, it was something that we do here at Copyblogger is,
And actually it's a question that we're going to get to in the listener feedback, which is, and we'll just get to it now, which is Priya asked us this, what do you do if you don't find anything good to share on a particular day? And, we were talking about this before we were recording, Damien, you don't share just to share. So if you don't find anything new on that particular day, don't share anything new on that particular day. And so you have one of two choices. You can either not share at all, or go back to your archive, find some really good posts from the past and bring them back. And I store everything in Evernote. And so, my process, when I find a blog post I like, I summarize it on a note card, type it into Evernote, and then tag it. And so that way I've got it, there for safekeeping later. And if I need something, I can just go through the blog posts that I've put in there. I know each one is really good, and I can almost choose one at random. Or if there's a specific topic I want, I can go back to that. So, but I think the simple answer is don't share just to share. Always make sure you're sharing something good. So, have your arsenal there, have your archive that you can go to if you need it.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. So let's continue on here, Dan. I know you had a couple final points with on this question of where, or even just kind of some general warnings on the topic itself.
So, and I think, include with that, I got this idea from a guy named Eli Parser, right? And so he did this TED talk where he talked about beware online filter bubbles. I think it's, pretty popular. I think, there's over 3 million views. So, and basically he's saying that we tend to, and this is conceptually just human nature. We tend to seek and share and consume content that fits our own biases, fits our own prejudices, fits our own views. So we never really quite challenge ourselves. So, my one warning, one thing I just try to do alone, just for the sake of growth and improvement, is to try to read stuff that challenges my own notions. And so and that would include finding something and then sharing it, and then including why you disagree with it, but trying to find that common ground with that particular content, because I think that's the only way. If we sort of just, and it goes back to what you said about this echo chamber, is avoiding that echo chamber, because we don't, think about it. Like if you, the echo chamber, people pretty much just sort of pat each other on the back. What you want to do is sort of disrupt that, is to bring an idea in that challenges somebody's notion, so people aren't always so willing to pat your back, but maybe to rethink the way they think, or to, even for you to rethink the way you thought.
Yeah, I agree that, and you can do that when you're sharing. I think, it kind of comes back to human nature. If you want to get someone to notice you, now you don't do this just to get noticed, but let's say that there's someone that you do read and you even trust and respect them, but you disagree with a particular point they make, it's okay to say that. And I think most people will have an intellectually honest conversation with you and actually appreciate it, as long as you're not a jerk about it. Don't be like, look at what this idiot wrote, but say, hey, I'm a big fan of such and such, but I disagree with him here. You can start an important dialogue that way.
Mm-hmm. Don't call people an idiot. I'm just writing that down, that note.
Yeah, good.
So what do you think about this? So another reader comment here, Greg Strandberg, he brought up an interesting point. He says that when he's curating content, he goes by article length. And this was his comment. He said, if there is an article with an opening, a closing, and three bullet points, it probably won't make it on my curation post. I go for longer on that. I'm biased, and I'll admit it. So what do you think about that? I mean, is there a specific link you look for when it comes to what you curate and share?
In general, I disagree with this statement, but I think whether it's right for him or not depends on why he's biased. Is he biased because that's what his audience wants? I mean, does he have an audience that just comes to him for long form and that's what they particularly like? Then okay, I can see that. But I think in general, if you're just looking at length to kind of suggest to you whether a post is good or not, I think to me, that's not a great criteria. You know, Seth Godin has a lot of posts that aren't very long, but they can make an important point in a short amount of time. And sometimes, as we know, you know, shorter writing is harder writing is better writing. So I don't think there's any particular length that makes a post good or not. So again, you want to be audience focused, but I think you're going to find good content of varying lengths.
Yeah, and I think the principle that Greg is after really is this idea of, because I mean, when he says that an article has an opening, a closing, and three bullets, what comes to my mind is sort of the shallow content you might see on you know, the how.com sort of yeah. sites. You know, they're the low quality keyword driven type of articles where they're just trying to campaign for a particular keyword. And I think that, you know, his principle is like, you know, this is a shallow content, but, yes, it's amazing. You know, I sincerely appreciate people who are able to, you know, communicate something, because it's, you know, as you kind of see, it's like, you know, huge long posts are hot. It would probably be, you know, fair to say that it's almost like a bubble in a sense that, you know, they're really, really popular and a lot of emphasis put on them. But, you know, to be able to see someone take, you know, say something within 300 words, and that's something I've been trying to push, you know, myself to do on my own blog, is to write shorter posts, because I spend a lot of energy and time on, you know, longer form for a copy blogger, but I wanted to kind of experiment, see what I'm doing with, you know, in shorter content. So It is harder. It is harder though.
To create
good content that way.
It is. Okay, so let's go back to the topic of acronyms, shall we? And Joel Zaslavsky, hopefully I pronounced that right, in the Google Plus conversation on episode 1, he explained his focus method. He pronounces it focus. It's FAOCAS for curation, using Excel. And I was particularly interested in this because I've never had anybody tell me they use Excel for curation.
Right.
You know, you got a lot of Evernotes, and, you know, people will use, you know, Pinterest, and even, you know, readability, things like that. I've never had anybody say Excel. But the acronym is Filter, Archive, Organize, Context, Access, and Share, which it sounds very powerful, and certainly the broader explanation he gave for it in his comment. But I'm not an Excel guy, so I really don't think it would work for me. But like we said, you know, different people, you know, different strategies are going to work for them. Damien, have you used Excel specifically for curation, or are you primarily an Evernote type?
Gosh, yeah, no, I mean, I don't even, when we talk about curation too, I mean, yeah, when he said Excel, I mean, I stopped reading at that point. That's what I did, but I kept reading and I reread it again, and like, wow, this is pretty excessive. I think the thing Joel is after, and he can correct us in the comments, is this idea of sort of accumulating, you know, because I think we curate, we share, and then we always kind of think, well, where did that one link go that I shared with? And so it's gone. So I think what he's doing, he's capturing that, right? So he knows where it's at. He knows, you know, the content that it was found, you know. So it's basically he's building an index in a sense, you know. I'm not there yet. And I, to be honest, you know, when I, share something, it usually, you know, my method, like I mentioned this before, is open the link up, share, you know, save it to readability. At some point, find the time to read it. Once I read it, if it's worthy, then share it. But after that, it's kind of gone. You know, I don't have it stored anywhere. Sometimes I might be, if I'm working on a larger project, for example, I will use Evernote to, like, you know, clip selections, and that, you know, then saves a link back to the site, and that's a great way to do it. But that's not really about creation in that sense. So I'm not nearly as precise as Joel.
Now, Joel also asked another question, which is very important. He says that he struggles with attribution. How far am I willing to go to chase down original source, especially if it's in dispute when I cite my quote-unquote hat tips? That's a toughie. And that is a toughie. What do you think about it, Damien? I mean, how far do you need to go to, you know, to cite to give those hat tips, or can you just tweet the link and you don't, or, you know, or post it on Google Plus and you don't necessarily need to tell people where you got it from?
Yeah, that's great. I don't know. I don't know. I tend not to do the hat tip, like, you know, unless I'm, yeah, I just be honest, I just don't do that. You know, I mean, So when I think about attribution, so let me just tell you the why I'm thinking this way. It's just because people are sharing content on it. So if you retweet it, right, that's, you know, the attribution in my mind. But if, say, you get something, you share it, and then I think it's perfectly okay. I mean, people are sharing stuff, and I think anybody who's going to be, you know, I want to be kind about this, who's going to be particular about, like, you know, I shared that link, and you didn't, you know, give me an attribution back to that. I think that, you know, there's larger issues at hand with that person than, you know, simple, you know, I don't know. So that's, what do you think?
Right. Well, and to be clear, there's a distinction between an idea inside of a post, right, and attributing an idea that you have that's not your own. Of course you have to do that. You know, but this idea of giving hat tips to the person that, you know, that you got a link from, I don't know. I don't really have a hard and fast rule for it. So I will do it sometimes if it's easy, but I don't know that I'm really going to go track it down. I mean, you know, I found this link somewhere. If I remember who to give the hat tip to, I will, because you always want to show that appreciation. But I don't know that I'm going to spend a whole lot of time tracking it down. I would rather spend more time amplifying the good ideas.
Right.
Yeah, because I think that's where you're going to get, where everybody's going to get more value. And then really, the final kind of piece of listener feedback here that we have, and we do encourage, you know, this in the comment sections of all these posts that we do, you know, to give us your feedback, give us your strategies, your tips, and your questions on this topic of curation. But Vinay explained Rohit Bhargava's 5 models of curation, which are aggregation, distillation, elevation, mashups, and chronology. And this is really a different kind of prism through which to view the curation topic than we're taking. But it's no less relevant. And so I'm going to link to Vinay's comment in the show notes, because I think he goes on and explains those. And so I think it's certainly good information to know, and it's another way to look at this topic. So definitely check that out. And again, if you have comments, if you have questions, put them in the Google Plus discussion section so that we can review them in the next episode. With that said, Damien, we have gone so far over the normal time that we do for these, and I'm okay with it, because I think, you know, this topic just kind of naturally went in that direction. But any final thoughts, punctuating statements on this second episode of the curation series?
No, except that I didn't think it was quite possible to be able to cover so much territory on link curation, but we did it, man. So
we did it.
I think that deserves a roar.
Well. Roar! There you go.
Next time, you practice, all right, buddy.
I am definitely editing that out, and I got to work on my roar here, like Simba sings, and I just can't wait to be king.
Yeah.
Brushing up on looking down, working on my roar. probably not making it any better by letting people know that I have that whole song memorized.
It sounds like it, dude. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. Hey, it's my favorite Disney movie. You know, what are you going to do?
Okay.
All right, so before I embarrass myself anymore, let's shut this episode down. And Damien, we will be back next week with episode 3 of the Content Curation Series. And I will let people know our summer posting schedule is coming up. So that episode is most likely going to be posted on Thursday, because we dial the schedule back a little bit during the summer. So episodes 3 and 4 of this are likely to be posted on Thursday, both on iTunes and on the blog. So stay tuned for those. Make sure you get us your feedback, and we will talk to you next week. Talk to you soon, Damien.
You too, Jared. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to The Lead. Again, if you're enjoying these episodes, please consider giving The Lead a rating or even a review on iTunes. Don't forget also that you can listen to us on Stitcher. Just go to copyblogger.com/Stitcher to subscribe there. And of course, if you want to tweet about the show, email the link to a friend. We'd really appreciate it. Any way that you can help us spread the word. And again, we welcome your feedback and your questions, plus your explanations of what works for you when it comes to curation. And you can do that over in the Google Plus comments section for this episode. You can also tweet us at Jared Morris, at Damien Farnworth, also a great way to reach both of us. Next week, we'll be discussing idea curation. How do you organize all of your ideas in such a way that you can access them when you really need them? And how do you curate in a way that effectively synthesizes disparate bits of information into coherent ideas for your audience? Tune in, and we'll all learn together.
So I wish I was a slave to an age-old trade. have mercy on my rough and